Welcome to Practical Witch Talk. I'm Friday Gladheart, and this week's podcast is with guest Andy Green. Today we're going to talk about throwing the bones or tossing the bones. Andy, why are we talking about bones, even though this week's topic is about dice?
Well, Friday, some people say throw the bones to mean toss the dice. Bones have been used for divination for thousands of years and throughout nearly every corner of the world. Before dice developed, knuckle bones, neck vertebrae, and the ankle bones of sheep and other quadrupeds were used for divination. These bones have distinctive sides that were often marked or inscribed. They were the first dice and were used in both games and religious ceremonies, especially divination.
Ew, gross.
Yes, I knew that would be your response. For those of you who don't know, Friday won't, as she puts it, poke dead things.
Well, you won't find skulls and bones on my altar, but I do enjoy the aesthetic when I see pictures on social media of other people's altars.
So not a necromancy practitioner.
Ew, no.
Divination by dice is called astragalomancy and sometimes cubomancy.
I prefer astragalomancy. As you know, I'm a big fan of etymology, and astragalomancy comes to us from astragalus, which is an anatomical reference to the type of bones you described. It probably has the same root as osteon, meaning bone, and brings us the words that include osteo, such as osteoarthritis and other medical terms.
Word nerd.
Well, that and cubomancy makes me think of the Borg.
Word nerd and a Trekkie. But on the subject of words, any type of divination where you are casting lots or drawing lots is a form of cleromancy. So dice, shells, bones, stones, even tarot and runes can be classified as forms of cleromancy. Pretty much any time you are selecting from a perceived random group of things.
I have an interesting technique that I touched on in this week's article in the Practical Witch's Almanac. I use a 22-sided die, D-I-E, that's the singular for dice, and I use this die to roll a major arcana, or arcana, tarot card for the day. The numbers on the die correspond to the number on the major arcana card, with the exception of 22, and that I designate as the Fool card. It is usually in cards given the Arabic numeral 0 rather than the Roman numeral.
Can you use dice for the minor arcana?
Oh, indeed. I have a set of 14-sided dice, D14s for the role-playing gamers. The white one is for swords, and that usually corresponds with air. The red one I use for wands, or fire. The green for pentacles, which correspond to earth. And the blue for cups, or water. And I roll these four dice with a 22-sided die to get a 5-card reading, with one major arcana, or arcana, and four of the minors, one in each of the suit.
That helps with learning the tarot as well, because you'll have to know the numerical correspondence to each of the cards and visualize the card in your mind.
Exactly, and the dice can be used for rune readings as well. There are sets of rune dice with four dies carved with a rune on each of their 6 sides, so it covers the 24 runes of the Elder Futhark.
You can also buy blank dice and make your own astragalomancy set. There are blank dice made of wood, plastic, and cow bones.
Ew.
And if you like working with stones and crystals, you can find many types of dice made from stones like rose quartz, onyx, and jade.
Whenever you are casting lots, you can also use a layout to give a bit more of a framework to your divination.
For example, a cord tied into a circle can be placed before you, and you cast your lots or toss your dice into the middle of the circle. The dice closest to the middle of the circle are closer to you in time. The ones near the circle perimeter are more distant. Those that fall outside of the circle can be people and situations around you, or can be ignored completely. You can also divide a circle into 12 sections that correspond to astrological houses. The dice or other lots you cast that land in a particular house then reflect the area the dice influences.
One of the earliest forms of divination I practiced was cleromancy. My family had a tavern restaurant, as I've talked about before. It was in the country. And I was enamored by the Crown Royal bags that we had behind the bar. I had one I kept my secret treasures in. There was a little skeleton key from an old secretary desk, a ring from a gumball machine, tiny yellow feather, and other such things. Little found objects and shiny items. After the kitchen closed for the night, child labor. Excuse me. After the kitchen closed for the night, I'd go around to the customers and have them pick something out of the bag. Then I'd tell them what it means. A key might mean that they were keeping secrets. The ring might mean they were going to get married, etc. The meaning changed for each person. So if they drew the same item, it had a different meaning.
So you've always been there.
I suppose. But it was sort of a social experiment for me, too. I didn't know how to interact with other humans and completely missed what appeared to be the standard social rules that everybody else seemed to know, but I was never told. Like many young magicians, the prestidigitation type, the stage magicians, not real magic. Like a lot of young magicians, my craft was a way to engage with other people, to have a topic to break the ice so I could get to know them. My curiosity about what is considered normal human interaction has never waned. When I founded Pagan Path in 1996, I did not allow ASL. ASL was age, sex, or location checks. Those were really popular through the 90s and early 2000s in chats and online forums and IRC chats. People would come into the room or come into a thread and say ASL, and then everyone was supposed to respond with how old they were and what their sex was and where they were located. And I did not want Pagan Path to be just another place to hook up with people. There were hundreds of thousands of different services doing that and so few places that were really talking about real magic and real witchcraft. So I forbid ASL. And people were only allowed to select from a few hundred non-gendered avatars that I'd created. And I went by the gender-neutral name of Volute, V-O-L-U-T-E, like the spiral on the top of a Corinthian column. Pagan Path had tens of thousands of members and almost as many students. We moved to the domain Witch Academy some years back to better reflect the teachings there. But when I officially changed my name on the website from the anonymous Volute to my name Friday and began using she/her pronouns, things changed a lot. I had written extensively on a wide variety of subjects like scrying, the Ganzfeld effect, the Besom, herbs, gardening, etc. My work became foundational in many books, especially books on witchcraft, and even in mainstream universities. My own students were happy to interact and ask questions and discuss ideas and topics when I was Volute. As it became known that I have female parts, the attitudes in the online communities for pagans, witches, and occultists changed remarkably, especially around the year 2000 to 2008. People would start to put me down. They'd mansplain to me, question my teaching more, and ask my sources constantly. I even had several people, not just men and women, come onto the forums and explain to me the basics of, let's say, candle burning magic, but they would be quoting directly from my own writing. They would be explaining it back to me in my own words. It seemed like, as a female, my thoughts and ideas were not valid unless validated by others, especially other men. That was a little shocking from our witchcraft community, but it is widely understood that information presented by a man or a male voice is given more credence and authority. It is only in the past few years that the statistical numbers in polls have begun to be more in balance. I'm happy to report that even though only about 30% of podcasters present as female, 50% of the top 10 rated podcasts are by female podcasters. Things are definitely progressing, but we have a way to go. What did you think of our guest Andy Green joining us today? Andy's name is an anagram for any gender, and he was created by fiddling with the pitch and tempo of my own voice in the recording. Now, I didn't use an AI, so you may have already guessed that he and I are the same. But ask yourself, at first, did he sound more authoritative to you? Thanks for joining and enduring this little social experiment while I expand on this week's topic of dice divination. I just wanted to switch things up a bit in case you get tired of hearing my voice. Please join me next week for the Sabbat podcast about Imbolc and Bridget's Day. I won't be donning any other voices than my own. And please like and subscribe to this podcast on YouTube, iTunes, or whatever service you're using. This has been a production of Practical Witch LLC in cooperation with witchacademy.org. If you'd like to learn more about witchcraft, herbs, and tarot, check out witchacademy.org. Blessed be. Mm-hmm.